welcome to Radio Oldie, sponsored by Baillie Gifford Actual Investors. Looking beyond today's headlines, Baillie Gifford backs exceptional companies driving progress and helping investors benefit from long-term growth.
Hello, welcome to The Odd Couple, the podcast in which my dear old friend John Humphreys and me, Matthew Norman, chat about various things of hopefully of interest to a few people. And today, John...
Let me guess.
Go on, you have a crack.
Prime Minister.
Is it the football? Oh, you want to talk about Prime Minister?
Do you know what? I was going to say football, and then I thought, we only have about 40 minutes.
We don't have long.
Not a week. All right. And anyway, we wouldn't be allowed to swear, would we? So.
All right. Now, listen, obviously you, at your great age, a man of such experience, have met and interviewed many of us. Now, I believe I believe your first one was Mr. Gladstone. Do you remember that?
Lovely man. Kind, thoughtful.
How you missed out Lord Rosebery and Salisbury, I don't know. But let's be less facetious.
It was their loss.
Yeah. Who was the first Prime Minister you ever interviewed?
Well, the first real interview with a Prime Minister I ever did was on the Today programme.
Yeah.
And it was, I still blanch when I think about it. It was Margaret Thatcher.
It was Mrs. Thatcher.
It was
so what
indeed.
Year? Let's
At
try and
the time, Mrs. Thatcher.
Give me a vague idea of the year.
1987.
1987, so the year of her third election win, when she'd already gone a bit
crazy. Well, she hadn't yet won the election. We were coming up to the election.
Yeah. So she was already going a bit crazy. Tell me how that one went for you.
It was arguably, and people would certainly argue this, because there have been many of them, a disaster. From my perspective, it was... I still wake up in the middle of the night sweating and thinking, oh, God, did you... Oh, how could...
Okay, why was it? Explain. Why was tell it? Tell us why.
Well, I was terrified, obviously. I'd only been on the programme, the Today programme, for, I don't know, some months, not very long anyway. She'd been Prime Minister quite a long time. And she was, as everybody knows, formidable. And I was scared of doing the interview because I had very little experience of doing interviews.
Yeah.
I've been a correspondent. I've been a reporter.
You've been reading the news.
And I've been reading the news.
That's a great talent, reading out loud. But
reading
it's not quite the same
from an auto queue for 6 years is not the same as interviewing a difficult Prime Minister. Anyway, I was terrified. What could I do, I asked myself, that would really throw her right from the start and then I'd pile in and become a hero? Something like that. So I figured that the question that would really get to her, to her soul, was...
A what? Anyway, carry
you heard,
on.
Yeah. You heard to her soul.
An interesting idea.
S-O-U-L.
Yeah.
Was, what is the essence of Christianity? And she was, she talked a lot about her belief. She was a passionate, I think that's a fair word to use, Christian. Talked a lot about it. So, and I thought this...
They didn't have any advance warning of the questions, obviously.
Oh, God,
they?
No.
Should have come at her from nowhere.
No. I have never...
It's a sucker punch.
I'm glad you asked me that, because another chance to say, I have never agreed to do an interview in which the editor told me, I would like you to ask this, that, or the other.
Right.
That is
quite
not
right.
What I do or did.
Okay, so was the question...
No, absolutely no.
Was it designed to sort of catch her off guard then, early doors?
It was designed to throw her.
Yeah. And did it throw her?
Well, the question was, what is, and I sweated over this for a long, long time, the question was, what is the essence of Christianity? And I made the big mistake, the huge, unforgivable mistake, I never did it again, I think, of persuading myself that there could be only one answer. She would have to say, as a devout Christian, the essence of Christianity is love. Or
very much her message politically.
Precisely.
As they tell you in the Northeast, the mining villages of the Northeast.
Precisely.
Right.
Love, charity, something like that. I would then be able to say, you talk about love.
Okay.
You talk about charity. And what have you been doing in your years in office? The nation is bleeding. Children are starving in the gutters. And you talk about love. And she would be utterly devastated
by
this.
I'm going to guess. I'm going to go on a wild guess to say that she didn't say love or charity or kindness.
No.
What did she say?
One word.
Go on.
Choice.
Choice.
Yeah. Good, eh?
Well,
I was totally thrown.
I mean...
I was... absolutely, totally thrown.
It's a brilliant answer.
Brilliant answer.
It's gibberish.
No, it's perfect.
Well,
it's perfect. I mean, what could I say?
No, I mean, it's brilliant, but I mean, choice she's applying the basically the precept, the fundamental precept of free market capitalism to what is basically a standard Marxist text, isn't she? Which is sort of genius and sophistry of the highest order.
No, what she was saying, it was just, when I had a moment to think about it, which I didn't, of course, I simply panicked. I think this is the perfect answer. I mean, yeah, we have a choice between being good or bad, evil or saintly. We have a choice. But whatever, we have choices to make in life.
I don't all think the Jesus. Way
life. I mean, and I'm that's not, what she meant.
Neither of us is a theologian. But, I mean, and I don't want to get sidetracked because we're talking about
But
Prime
you
Ministers,
are doing that.
But, you know, it's rubbish, isn't it? There's no choice, really.
No, I don't think it's rubbish.
There's
at all.
A bunch of very strict rules in the Bible, and for you know, there are commandments.
Yes, and we
it doesn't say, well, you know, number six, you may or may not honour your parents, or you may or may not covet your neighbour's wife or your oxen.
But hang on a minute, who forces us to obey the Ten Commandments?
Well, we have our codified laws, which are basically
But.
Well, we have the choice to disobey them.
Ah, thank yeah. you. We do.
But
indeed.
I don't think she said that, you have the that, choice that to be a criminal. That wasn't the message.
But we do have a choice. Right. Has to be.
Well, that's a huge question of free will. That's for another debate with other people.
Yeah, quite so.
Some of your religious mates, like
anyway,
Archbishop Canterbury's.
She threw me.
Anyway, and you never recovered in the interview.
No.
And I'm sure it wasn't as disastrous as you felt, but you suffered for a long time.
Well, look, it's lived me for the last 50 or 60 or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For a very, very, very long
time. I don't know
time.
How you I could have prepared. You thought you were being clever and she...
No,
she,
I was being...
She
I
caught you
what,
with a sucker
Matthew,
punch.
I was very kind of you to say I was being clever. You
no, I said you
that.
Thought you were. You didn't
well,
say you were.
Yeah, right, that's
quite the opposite.
God, the day you flatter me. No.
Okay.
I was being stupid. I was being profoundly... You should never, never assume that you know what the... If it's a clever...
Sure.
And she was clever, for God's sake. If it's a clever politician with the sort of experience that she's had, etc., etc., you should never right. assume you know what they're going to say.
So let's move on. Then you learnt from your rookie
well,
era.
I hope I did.
And you presumably... So presumably you've interviewed every Prime Minister from Thatch up to who? Up to who? Cameron or beyond?
Yeah, Cameron.
Did you get Boris?
Yeah,
do you have a
Boris? Yeah.
And May, obviously. And then Boris was your last?
Boris would have been my last, yes.
Right, OK.
Yes.
And in that time... So how many were talking about? Seven or eight of them?
Yeah, about eight, yeah.
And the one I remember as the biggest set piece...
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Formula One.
Formula One, yes. And that doesn't mean you had, you know, Lewis Hamilton on to talk about chicanes and pit stops, but...
No, I could, if you like.
Let's put... So 10 years after your Thatcher debacle...
By the way, can I just interrupt you for one second to say I want to ban Formula One.
Right.
Yeah, when I become dictator of the universe.
All right,
After I ban football, I'll ban Formula One. But anyway, carry on.
Good timing with the football banning,
yeah,
yes.
absolutely,
yes.
perfect timing.
But people never interfere in the rules of football, so you'll be absolutely fine.
Well, God. Isn't Donald Trump a hero? I never thought I'd say
right.
that. But
moving on, then.
that was a joke, by the way, just in case there's anybody out there who believes that for
thankfully,
a millisecond.
We'll put a laughter track on this one for you,
thought.
Just so anyone's not in any doubt. So 10 years after your Thatcher fiasco, and it was a fiasco of the highest order, as you said, and a disaster, Mr. Tony Blair came to power, and within months of coming to power, there was a massive scandal over the acceptance of a £1 million donation from Bernie Eccleston, the head of Formula One, after which Labour... changed its policy on tobacco advertising.
Especially on tobacco. Okay.
And it was a scandal that at the time, nowadays it would get two paragraphs on page 19 of the Times.
Oh, it was a big story.
At the time, massive story. And you had, and now, if I remember right, you didn't solicit the interview, it was given to you. Is that right?
Well, we tried to interview every minister in the government over
right.
that particular weekend, and they all said, "You got to be kidding, this is poison."
Yeah.
That's what they said privately.
Of course.
None of them would do it, absolutely none of them. And I was doing a programme called On the Record at the time.
Which was a big long-form Sunday lunchtime interview.
Yeah, I had an hour to talk to people, and it went out at midday on Sundays on BBC One.
Yeah.
And on Saturday afternoon, the Saturday before the Sunday... we had nobody to interview, absolutely nobody. Nobody, because there was only one story in town, and it was Formula One. And nobody would talk to us. And then at about 4 o'clock, oh, I'm going to have to moderate my language now, aren't I? But at about 4 o'clock, Alistair Campbell.
I should say, before you go on, actually, that one of my only achievements, and a shared thing with you, is that Alistair Campbell, according to his son, had a death list of five people in the world who wanted dead. And you and I were honoured to be two of the five.
I'm very proud of that.
So that's presumably why you modified your language, because it might have been preceded by a couple of words, beginning with that and then something else, and then Alistair Campbell.
Most of them began with C, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's whatever Alistair Campbell
anyway,
was in
what
touch.
He said was, in it, after I've cleaned up the language a little bit, he ran me in the on the record office and said, suppose you blank, 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 want to interview Tony tomorrow.
Right.
And I said, yes, I do. Really? Anyway, or something
you
like that.
You were having a stroke at the time, clearly.
I was
clearly,
having a stroke at the time.
Yeah.
And he was offering Blair. What a scoop! An old-fashioned word
that
to use, isn't it?
Scoop, yeah.
Terrible scoop. We had to go to his country residence to do it, but that was fine. I had to set
you went to Chequers?
I went to Chequers.
Right.
Had to set up an outside broadcasting all the time. Didn't have much time to do it. And all that, but fine, yeah. And
so, listen, so this was a scandal. I know it seems crazy in the world of Trump and Farage and other rogues and scoundrels, but this was a moment in which his very young premiership was in grave peril.
Oh, I think most of us thought that he would be forced to resign.
And I think he thought he might.
I think he thought he was.
And so massive pressure on you that Saturday night, Sunday morning. Mm. You have the power, possibly, if you destroy him in the interview, to end this, you know, which would be extraordinary, the most popular and successful and biggest majority prime minister in decades or centuries. And there you are. You are the one with the knife, and if you can only plunge it. So you must have been nervous about that.
I was terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, as we know...
And he Campbell built on this, because the normal thing is, when you're doing a programme like that, when you've got one interview and an hour of live television to fill, the interviewee arrives maybe 10 minutes early, maybe has a cup of coffee, have a chat, whatever. Not on this occasion. There we were in Chequers. We were all set up. Our little studio set, such as it was built. I was sitting in the chair. We went on the air literally at 1 o'clock. And I was sitting.
This is live. It's going out live, is it?
Oh, of course.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Jesus,
absolutely.
Well. And how much had you had time to war game it and prepare and try and
well,
anticipate?
Well, I knew that we were going to do the interview on the Saturday afternoon, so I had... Yeah, I mean, it was perfectly reasonable. I had the rest of Saturday, think about it, and then Sunday morning and drive down to Chequers.
And did you war game it with your team, though, saying if you
said
that?
Oh, yeah. We had it.
And trying to anticipate his slithery.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
but in the end, you war game. I mean, in the end, you're on your own because.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I tried to illustrate it with the Thatcher thing. I mean, I didn't know what she was going to say. However much I planned it, in the end, the interviewee is going to say what the interviewee intends to say, whatever question you ask them. So you couldn't plan it in that. You can't plan.
And he was.
If you're doing a proper interview, you do not sit there. At least certainly, I didn't. With a list of questions that you ask, you don't do that. Of course, you know what.
But you know what.
You know where you want the interview to go.
But you and I knew Brian Walden a bit. You better than me.
Well, Brian Walden was a genius. He was the best political.
Oh, he was fantastic. Yeah. But what he did was, it was like a game of chess. And he would have diagrams, and a very good friend of yours, I think, was his main man, John.
Yep, John Mayfield.
Incredibly clever and delightful man. And they would war game it so that if the interviewee says A, you go to D, and if the interviewee says B, you go to L.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a very military kind of operation, how you respond. You were more busking it, more instinctive.
The thing is, I hadn't done any serious interviewing before... I mean, I'd been foreign correspondent for donkey's years, and I'd interviewed all.
But after the Thatcher thing, who'd let you loose on it? For God's
quite.
But listen, so there you are, and you've got someone who was a sort of semi genius at evasion and slithering out of stuff, almost impossible to nail him to a wall. How close did you get, do you think, in that hour odd?
I'm not the best person to judge that.
You got a quote for the ages out of him, didn't you? Or he spoke it on that show when he told the world without any apparent attempt at ironic wit. I think he said, look, John, I think people know I'm a pretty straight kind of guy.
Pretty straight kind of guy.
Did you? And you can't snort with derision.
No, you can't.
Maybe at that early stage you wouldn't have had that instinct to snort. But But and there wasn't enough. And if you said that 5 years later, you said, pretty straight kind of guy, Prime Minister. Let me point to this, you know, the dossier on it. Well, again, something you had a bit of part of. But you could have pointed to 10 examples when he'd been a pretty lying kind of bastard. But you couldn't at that stage.
No.
He was too young and fresh.
Uh-huh. And that was what made the papers the next day. I mean, it's the lead story in every single newspaper the next day.
So one assumes that he and Campbell had hatched up this phrase as a soundbite for the bulletins.
Oh, yeah. They've given
nothing
that,
you could do.
They've given that a lot of thought. I remember walking out of the studio when I didn't finish that little anecdote, by the way, about sitting there waiting to arrive. And normally they are there, as you might expect, when the programme begins. And what happens with the programme, it used to happen with the programme, is you would say, hello, I'm John Evans, this is blah, blah, blah. Then you'd have a few news headlines, and they'd say, and with me is the Prime Minister, blah, 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 and off you go. And because he would be sitting there. But he, Blair, wasn't sitting there. We went on air, ding, 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 and I said, I'm John, and I was looking, as I was saying, and with me, I was looking at an empty chair because he wasn't there.
Right.
Campbell just... he gained
what, just everything. To throw you off your
just
game?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, where was
we were
he,
in, though? In his own house. Well, I mean, his own house. We wouldn't check it. I mean, and he wasn't there. I hadn't seen him. I hadn't spoken to him. I hadn't, whatever.
Right.
There was an empty chair. And he slid into it just as I was about to say, and with me, I hope, is the Prime Minister.
Right.
And then, anyway, so he did Campbell just did every show. And he said to me afterwards when we went out into the little room, and Tony and Cherie and I, the four of us standing around chatting, doing a little post-mortem, and Campbell said, well, am I a fucking mess? Am I allowed to?
Yes, of course you were.
Mess with that, didn't you? I'm pretty... Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And Tony said, I'm not sure he did. And he looked down at his feet and said, but the point is, he
was a master at that.
He was.
He really was, wasn't he? And... hilarious quote. Anyway, so that something came out of it for the ages, if not his resignation.
Hebridean Island Cruises have a rather special departure this September. Colin Montgomery is joining Hebridean Princess with 47 other passengers for a golf cruise through Argyll and Ayrshire, playing courses including the legendary Macrinish and the ancient links at Macri on Isla. But non-golfers are very much welcome too, with excursions ashore exploring castles and distilleries. This cruise is currently at 15% off with standard UK rail or air travel to the ship included. Visit hebridean.co.uk or search Hebridean Island Cruises.
What I did fail to do with him, and this was quite a long time after that, obviously, we'd had the war and an awful lot of people had died and all the rest of it, and then we had inquiries. The first one was a total piece of theatre. The second was the Chilcot inquiry, was a serious inquiry that took a very, very long time and did a massively thorough job, millions of words given in evidence and so on, and Blair was ripped apart. But
only in Mandarin, not in English, sadly. So the record, you know, was classic civil service euphemism.
Everyone
knew, but it was enough.
I think it did him enormous. And he came on. He didn't do any interviews after that. He did two. They had a press conference, and he answered some questions at the press conference. Mm. And then he had already said when he resigned, he said he would do only two lots of interviews, both of them with me.
Wow.
One on, I know.
That's not the flattery it might appear, though. Why
well, you, I precisely.
You know, if you've been frightened of you, we'll come near you.
Exactly.
But
what
they
I
did
thought.
Have the, what they later called in Iraqi wartime, the masochism strategy. So you take the much pain as you can, get it out the way. So, you know, you...
I didn't know whether to be flattered or... Yes,
I think flattered, yeah.
Oh, well, I'll settle for flattered.
Okay. So probably the biggest set-piece interview of career, was it? The most sort of
The biggest set-piece interview I did with him was after the Chilcot inquiry, because...
On the Today programme?
On the Today programme.
So that was, what, 15, 20 minutes?
Well, you would think so. That was how it was meant to be. But... I got a little bit carried away. He got a little bit carried away. And the editor of the Today Programme didn't quite know what to do. it became the longest interview there's ever been on the Today programme because I wouldn't stop and Blair wouldn't stop and we talked instead of 10 or 15 minutes.
I think you mentioned this because you went through the sports.
I even cracked the sport. No sport. No. I kept going.
It must have been personally painful for
about,
you.
Painful. Yeah,
that's the level of self-sacrifice you were willing to endure for your art.
That's the kind of person
you're
I am.
You're a fucking hero, John. You really
what can I say? I went until 11 minutes to 9.
You did? Yes. So actually,
just kept.
It was 50 minutes. No, 40.
It was the best part, yeah.
40 minutes?
Yeah.
So it was about
and
as long as
still,
on the record.
To this day, persuade. I mean, everybody said, oh, what a wonderful interview. It wasn't a wonderful interview because I blew it. Because he used an expression during the course of the interview which was has been burned into my brain ever since because... When I finally said, look, the war was corrupt, and so on and so on.
Yeah.
I did all the obvious stuff, you know, told
hundreds
of thousands of people died, shouldn't have died, and all that sort of thing. And Blair said, I only knew what I believed. Yeah. And that...
Well, that's chilling, isn't it?
That was...
That's pretty much the definition of malignant narcissism,
but that was
it?
Too late. You know, I got it too late.
Yeah.
I let it go without...
But it's the exact
opposite. You,
no.
If you are a prime minister or anybody else, you believe what you know.
But listen, that was about as prophetic a thing as you probably ever entice anyone, because that's the sort of birth of the...
Yeah, but I should
of the,
have
of the age of relative, you know, fact and personal choice.
I should have said so.
I had a friend who said once to me, years later, said, well, I believe, you know, people choose what to believe.
Well,
it's their choice, which of course it is, but this now overrides facts. So this was very early. This is, you know, long before the advent of Trump and the rise
resurgence
of propaganda across the liberal...
I tell you, I had a difficult choice of age. Well, it wasn't such a... Earlier on, long before all of this happened, long before, after we'd had the invasion and so on and so on, I got a call from somebody I realised immediately it was MI6 because they said, Mr. Humphries, after the Taylor programme, Mr. Humphries, if we were to invite you to have lunch with a certain senior figure in so-and-so, could we rely on you not only not to repeat anything that said during the lunch, but to deny the lunch ever took place, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And it was obvious. And obviously, I had to say, well, you can't say bugger off, can you?
No.
So I had to say, yeah, right. And
not
of course...
not with the file they got on you.
Precisely. And I had to... So it was lunch with the Director General of the Director of...
Of the FUNT for the sex, the MI5.
MI5.
Right.
And during the course of the lunch, we eventually, of course, it was all about Iraq. And in the end, I asked him the obvious question. And I said, is it even conceivable that Tony Blair, after your briefings and all the rest of it, because he had told me by that stage in the lunch that he had, he went to Downing Street virtually almost every morning.
Is this John Scarlett?
Every
or his
successor? This is the director of...
Right.
Yep. So he told Blair there were no weapons of mass destruction.
He said that.
Stop. He said, I said to him, are you actually saying blah, 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 and there were no weapons of mass destruction? And he said, and I remember this, he said, on any Cartesian analysis, you have to remember he was the director of MI5. On any Cartesian analysis, one could not conceivably reach any other conclusion.
In other words, the guys are...
In other words,
liar.
The guy was lying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's nice when you have what you
but
know.
But the trouble is, I could not, having sworn on my children's lives, I could not then go out into the world and say, guess what, the Red Hood... couldn't do that.
And of course, he's still out there, this monstrous rogue. And now he's offering advice to our future leader, who will be... Now, we're 2 days at time of recording from the nominations opening for the leadership of the party and country. There will be no challenges. So in about 9-10 days, we'll have Andy Burnham as Prime Minister. I don't know if you ever came across him.
Well,
you must have.
Him, yeah.
I wouldn't have thought he made a tremendous impression. I mean,
neither one way nor the other.
No, I would have thought he'd be a very bland interviewer.
Not right, is it, that we can have a Prime Minister for whom none of us... we don't vote for our prime ministers, but nonetheless,
right.
there's something not right about it.
Why? You want a presidency? formal
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I mean, it's wrong. When it's not an easy one when something's right, something's wrong. It's a very finely balanced argument.
It is.
We haven't got the time at the moment for 10 weeks.
Maybe one of these conversations we should take that seriously.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. So, okay, let's go back a little. So after, what are the other memorable... I mean, that's the biggest, when you had him at your mercy and he slithered away. I don't remember any major... I mean, obviously you interviewed everyone. Anything that sticks in your mind particularly? I mean, obviously also just... to interrupt myself, that was kind of the dog days of the long form interview, wasn't it? The idea now of a politician sitting down for an hour with a ferocious interviewer is unimaginable, isn't it?
Pretty much, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
I confess, and I shouldn't confess this, I know, but there we are. I don't watch television. I do get all of my stuff from, pretty much all my stuff from Radio 4 and newspapers. Mm-hmm. So,
but I mean, now I think 10, 15 minutes would be the absolute maximum.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not good,
in Farage's case, I mean, someone I think who will not be succeeding as Prime Minister, less likely than ever.
Looking a bit ropey for him, isn't it?
I mean, and you see him being interviewed, and now he's sort of snarling.
Mm.
He hasn't got that.
I used to love interviewing Farage.
Well,
way back in the day.
He was good value. He spoke his mind. He was very fluent. He's incredibly talented, much as people...
And extremely pleasant and friendly.
Smug-bleeding heart liberals like me hate him, but I recognise his talent. But now he's just sort of enraged and cornered rat, isn't he?
How much do you... you take a reasonably intelligent interest in current affairs, I would say that. I mean, for some of the... but how much do you rely on broadcast for your political...
Very, very little. It's worthless. I mean, I think BBC...
Less than you used to?
Yes, infinitely less. Well, there's no Paxo, there's no Humpo. I think the BBC's political editor is good, but
there are plenty of very good interviewees. I mean, Justin, Nick,
very good, very good,
very good people.
But television, not at all.
Not at all.
If it's Justin, I'd listen to it, but not really, because they're so well practiced now, aren't they? They're so overcoached.
It's a bit of that, isn't it?
It's hard to imagine a major, unless you've got a Trump figure who just couldn't care less what he says, and has no sort of self-protection about candor, then you're not going to get anything of interest, are you? That you can hear it. You can, as soon as they open their mouths, you're in the room with these 24-year-old bright idiots making up. They're working out lines to take, and they memorize them, and they trot them out.
Do you think?
And
there is no,
yeah. And you go back. The further you go back, you see Wilson, Callahan, Heath. They're engaging in conversation with the interviewer. It's a two-way thing. Now it's just a kind of mystery play or a little.
So in the end, they're all the same, aren't they? Remember, you've mentioned Callahan. While I was a foreign correspondent based in Washington. Yeah. And I'd gone up to New York to interview Callahan because he was making a speech. Then he was Foreign Secretary at the United Nations, and he was very grumpy, as he often was. And we had a little chat before we started the interview, and the interview was deeply boring. And I mentioned something about my parents and Cardiff, and he said, and I said, "But actually, my parents live in, I come from a spot, my parents live there." And he leaned across, and there was... this man who had been grumpy and squeezed my knee.
Did he?
And he said, "John, your parents, now, they would be..." Wait for me to say George and Winnie. Mm-hmm. Of course, he never... My father was so right-wing, you couldn't...
That
my mother did whatever my father wanted to do, so that was it. The idea that my knee was firmly grasped.
Yeah.
"Do give them my best regards. No. I must." And it was... he became my friend from then on for the rest of the interview.
And this is Jim Callahan. For young, in the unlikely presence of any younger listeners, Jim Callahan was the Prime Minister from, 76 to 79? And the only politician in British history to hold all four great offices of
state. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah. But if you had Jim Callahan on, he would have talked intelligently and engaged with the question. He wouldn't all have been pre-prepared things designed for bulletins, like 10-second snaps.
The sound bite, changed, you mean the sound bite? Yeah, sound bite. It is all about the sound bite, isn't it?
But I mean, I think maybe the bit from the late 40s to the late 90s was a blip, Because before that, well, because
there was nothing before 1940.
Well, you'd have had, you know, the old cliche, and thank you, Minister, and do you have anything else to tell a grateful nation?
Exactly.
And so between that and now, when it's all kind of like a pantomime.
But I don't quite get that, because the interviewers, are no less intelligent and thoughtful.
No, they're not. But the politicians, you know, it's an organic thing. It's developed to the stage when it's like a kind of, it is like professional wrestling. Every move is choreographed from their side, and there's no way blasting through that, I don't think.
Really?
I mean, if I was dictator, you mentioned becoming lifetime dictator, but if it was me, one of my edicts would be that any politician interviewed now would have to be strapped to a polygraph. And as soon as they lie, they would get an electric shock. And each lie, their electric voltage would increase.
Who is in charge of the button?
Me or the people I've instructed, or you know, or they're working.
But you, as editor or as interviewer,
as dictator,
Yeah. I see. Yeah,
they would be working to the Führer, to use that phrase. I see. They wouldn't have to be instructed. They would know what I wanted.
But then we presumably wouldn't need, in glorious days to come, we wouldn't need elections and things like that.
Electricity, no elections. That could be the slogan.
Electricity, no elections. Elections,
but there wouldn't be that many. A lot of them would be dead from electrocution.
I see.
And only the good ones would survive. It would be a Darwinian system, really.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And who would decide were good and...
Me. Me or my delegates.
Fair enough.
That's the whole point. I don't know if you understand.
Yeah, being a dictator. You wouldn't want to confuse the lines of command, would you? No, I can see that. I can see that. Well, so, I look forward to the day. But how old are you now?
Just 104.
Yeah, see, I could. You're looking well for
still
it.
Still only 20 years younger than you.
Reasonably.
No, but listen, okay, let's finish up by talking a little about Andy Burnham, who, you know,
what? I don't think I've got anything interesting to say.
No, not him personally, but him as Prime Minister,
As Prime Minister.
And maybe, I don't know if you could take over in. I mean, you could, but there haven't been worse circumstances to inherit this job ever, maybe, not in our lifetime. Maybe Mr. Churchill in May 1940 wasn't that smoother a sea that he was sailing.
This has not been ideal.
But in peacetime, is it possible, do you think? Now, we have this new cliché du jour, which is that Britain is ungovernable, which we haven't heard since the 70s. But is it possible for a prime minister to succeed? Now, we've been through 7 in 10 years. We are going through one of those periods of turmoil when people won't tolerate, there's no patience, no one's given time. Is it possible for Andy Burnham or anyone to make a success of this job in these circumstances?
Yes, in short, because if you say no to that answer, what you're saying is democracy in this country has failed. And I don't believe that's the case.
Well, you've hinted that it's failed because we're having a prime minister and an election to choose him.
Yes, and that is regrettable. Yeah. But he's not going to be able to do it again, and his time, he'll be there for four years. Is it 4 years? It'll be about 4 years.
We've got 3 years to an election.
Three and a bit,
almost exactly, yeah.
And then we'll have another election, and then we may be back on track. This has been a very unfortunate blip, in my view.
What, these last few years?
No. The whole a prime minister who has not been elected in a general
election.
But
it's not a blip, because it happens the whole time. You can go back, Eden, well, he did have an election, Macmillan, May took over that election, Johnson did call an election, but Truss didn't have time. I mean, it's not uncommon, this.
Well, on the other hand, the prime minister who has stepped down was elected in a proper election.
Yes, yes.
And he decided that he had to go because his party turned against him. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, regrettable in some ways. I'd rather like Keir Starmer, but there you go.
Yeah, But we are getting through them at a rate of knots. We had 3 in about 30 years, and now we've had 7 in 10 years. These are
incredibly volatile. A couple of them lasted for 30 seconds or so, and that's fine. It didn't matter. I mean, she was a figure of fun, and that was, an aberration. And we got rid of, thank God, we got rid of Campbell. I mean, it hasn't been a disaster. It's been silly.
No, I'm not saying it's a disaster.
All right.
But there are questions now whether anyone can last more than 2 or 3 years in this climate. And there's no sign of it.
But the climate changes, doesn't it? That's the thing about climate.
The climate changes, but there's no sign of it getting cooler any more in politics and geopolitics than in weather.
Well, I tell you what, let's talk about that in a year.
Should we review it in a year?
We'll review it in a year.
Excellent. So, okay, so you wouldn't have, if you had Andy Burnham for an hour now, in a couple of weeks, What area do you think you'd what stance would you all want to take with him?
Do you know what? I haven't a clue what... I suppose I'd be deeply boring and I would say there is no such thing as Manchesterism or whatever call it. I mean, that's just an absurd idea, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, and putting number 10, having an... I mean, no.
Okay.
No. Silly.
Silly?
Yeah.
Well, I think the Oracle has spoken. And we've already damned the Prime Minister before he's been... put in his place.
Because we know what he's going to do, unless, of course, he finds reasons not to do it. When he's actually ensconced in number 10 Downing Street, perhaps he will feel that actually that bit of it works reasonably well, and he'll say, well, you know, maybe we won't do it in Manchester just yet. We'll leave it a little while and so on. I don't know. It's just silly.
I mean, okay.
You and I think it's silly, so there we go.
I don't know. I think people will be very quickly disappointed because I don't think he's stubborn enough for the job at the moment. But I think he's likable and affable.
Oh, he's likable and affable.
Human and well, you know, but small
mercies. Well, you're likable. Well, actually, no, fair, no. I'll withdraw that. I was about to say you're likable and affable. You're neither of those things, are you? But if you... No, you... I would. Do you know what? I'd probably vote for you for Prime Minister. So long as...
I'm not sure I want your vote, really.
Well,
I think, actually, if I was on the PR side of it, I'd say, no. That's an endorsement that's going to cost us. But thanks anyway.
Well, that's why I'd do it. Precisely why I would do it. Okay. Because that would give me the credibility then, you see, to say, I actually bloody voted for the man, and what a wanker he turned out to be. Do you see?
So you need there is to a have logic. There is a logic to feel it. Betrayed yeah. by, and yeah. disappointed.
What would you do? First thing you do?
I would gift our permanent seat on the Security Council to India.
Sorry, say that again.
I would give it away.
What are we talking?
Why does a decaying, pathetic little island nation like this have a permanent seat on the? Not that it's an important.
Oh,
UN,
I see.
So as a gesture and as a statement, I would say India's the world's largest democracy. I don't particularly care for its current management. But nonetheless, it is, and it's the future superpower. And you know, I know we stole your country once. Now it's a small repayment. And as a mark of respect, please take our seat on the Security Council. That's my first thing. I don't think Andy Burnham's going to do that.
I don't think that'll arouse the masses.
No,
you know?
No.
I rather suspect that one.
Okay.
You know,
And then I'd obviously give you a...
I wouldn't run on that basis.
I'd give you a dukedom.
You give me a dukedom?
The Duke of Splott, the first Duke of Splott.
First Duke of Splott. Yeah, that's okay. A dukedom would be okay. It's the only one I would accept. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want anything else because it goes forever, doesn't it? The dukedom, mm-hmm. that's the point. You know,
it's
forever.
It's
so
hereditary, yeah.
And all of your kid. My older son would be an earl then, I think, wouldn't he? Or something like that.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not very good at it. It's not really my field.
Yeah, I think so.
I know that in Splott you talked about nothing else but the...
Very little else.
But the nobility and how it worked. But not in my world. And the third thing I do, I think I'd start interfering in the rules of football because the precedent for that's encouraging.
Oh, I'd
let England can start with 13 men instead of 11.
And the other side would have how many?
11.
They'd have 11.
Yeah, we'd have
England, because I'm Welsh, exactly. Obviously.
And that would be my first week. What about you? What would you do? What insanity would you unleash?
I'd ban football.
You'd actually ban football? Do you think that's politically popular?
Not for children. Not for kids. No. Great. I loved watching.
Well, you're not going to face an election, are you? Because you're a dictator, so you can do what you like. But I don't know that it would be...
You're making the assumption that I'd want to be in power. The thought of power terrifies me.
Well, that's another one for another day. But do you think axiomatically it's a sign of insanity to want to rule and tell people how to live? To want power. Does that axiomatically mean you're mad?
Probably.
Yeah,
probably.
So
yeah.
They're all mad. Yeah. Well, I think that's a very good... That's a perfect place to leave it. They're all mad.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And
if they're not already mad, sooner they will be, because if they accrete power to themselves, then yes, they become more mad.
Well, and on that note, let's wish Andy Burnham the very best of British luck.
You bet.
And we'll meet again shortly.
Let's hope so.
God bless you.
This week's podcast was kindly sponsored by Baillie Gifford Actual Investors, who take a long-term approach to investing in exceptional companies.